And you're tuned in to 3CR. We're about to do a live cross to the International Women's Day rally at Parliament. But we're going to keep playing music until we get our roving reporters on air.
Happy International Women's Day. Stay tuned to 3CR.
One, two, three.
We don't need another reason to resist or fight back, because the slaughter of our matriarchies is enough trauma for my entire life. But of course you had to take, one-up yourself, Australia, and take the life of my brother Wayne too, didn't you? You had to try to break my back with the weight of all that shit you'd done for me. The weight of the brutal death of my own brother, who just 5 months ago was lost to systemic violence and brutality as your last bloody death in custody. Or the other ways you attempt to kill my spirit and body, with the constant surveillance and detainment of anything I, we, as black women, attempt to achieve. Don't you realise you should be sustaining me? Don't you realise you should be sustaining your black patriarchy and the bodies of us as black women, instead of putting us down, paying us out, and thinking it's cool to say shit like, black hair is just so nappy. Well, you answer me, why your white Beckys want to trade their golden locks for box braids and dreadlocks? Why do your people get to paint their bodies black, while for the our melanin, we are shamed? Cultural appropriation is your game and cultural genocide your framework. And as we work against the oppression you deal out to us, we as black women get up straight, take the pain, and by way of default, you get to stand up another day. So rest up now, Australia, and give us a break. Stop the genocide, stop committing murders and rape and taking our kids away. Because as one of your black matriarchs, Aunty Marjorie Thorpe, states, Aboriginal women have always had the entrenched knowing that the women in our society are depended on by our society to stand up, work, and have their say. Don't let your feminism drive your racism, Australia. Remember your black women today. Thank you.
Thank you, Latoya. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. 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 All right, so welcome to the stage, Aunty Marg, to give us our welcome to country. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, good evening. I think it's evening, isn't it? After 5:30 is evening, isn't it? Old-fashioned, but we're trying not to follow too many old-fashioned ways, which means male domination and female submission. Days have changed and the culture worldwide has changed. Some of the cultures within that, though, have not changed and really need to, I suppose, modify so that there's a happier community. Now, whether it's based on religious belief or just simply this is the way it's always been, so why change it? I can hear Andrew Bolt now. My belief is that without some type of evolution, and that means changes in attitudes, changes in the way people want to live, and don't forget that without the women, there'd be no children. Of course, there'd be none either without the men. So we need to start thinking about being more harmonious, having things a bit more equitable, in that, you know, women shouldn't have one day a year where they're running a television station. They shouldn't have one day a year where they're recognised and able to speak out. It doesn't matter what you say because you get away with it. It needs to be more than that. I think we all have to ensure that our children are educated to be human beings, not just little machines who need to process things like a computer from grade prep. They need to not forget what the smell of a book is like. They need to learn things. And how do kids learn? They learn with song and dance and repeating things over and over. That's how you teach them the language, no matter what language it is. They have to hear it to then be able to repeat it and try to say it. So that's the way education has to be. It needs to be steered towards what each child's needs are. And that goes for the whole of community once you're an adult. I'm not saying we all have to bend over backwards for each other, but we must keep in mind that without those other people around us to provide some support or some fostering or some guidance, mentoring, all of that, we could really be a lost people. The Aboriginal community is lucky in that the elders are still maintaining as much of the old knowledge as possible and passing that on. Now, we could say in this day and age that a lot of our customs and traditions are no longer followed. Now, to some degree that may be true, but instinctively our young people know that they must respect their elders. It's an instinctive thing. The other instinctive things are being able to pick up the language reasonably easy, which is what all little kids do anyway. So I suppose because we have been in effect ignored for a bit more than 200 years, we didn't exist, we weren't citizens, we've been left alone so that we're able to try to maintain some of that old way. Because without the past, you don't have much of a future. That's my belief. I've got four kids, three of them are boys. I've brought them up to respect women. I said to them, if you get upset with it, "Oh, sorry, I'm a bit dry. The speakers aren't working." No. So, well, I've just been talking this afternoon, actually, at a cooperative where a woman who was the longest serving staff member leaving today, had a few words about her at the organisation. So I'm a little bit worded out, really. You're not getting a cultural talk tonight. You're not getting to hear about Wurundjeri culture, because that's not necessarily why I'm here. I'm here to give a message that women are important across the planet. So are men. So are men, but I know they'd be pretty lonely without the women. They wouldn't have mothers. They wouldn't have sisters. They wouldn't have aunties. They wouldn't have cousins. Oh, they'd have no girlfriends. So we must all be conscious of each other. Take some care with people around you. Everything you do affects more than just yourself. It could be anything up to 100 people. Oh, 1,000 if you're on Facebook. So, you know, there comes a time where we need to stand still, take stock and think about where we've come from and where we want to go. That's something the Aboriginal community nationally and worldwide has had to do, and it's had to be done regularly. And it's events like this that remind us all that there is an International Women's Day. And I have to say, quite honestly, that women generally in Australia don't have it as bad as some of the women in the Middle East or in maybe India. I shouldn't even say that, should I? Robert Doyle will get upset. There are countries where women are really crushed and oppressed. Now, you have the freedom of speech here, and I think you should consider yourselves lucky that you have that. You've earned it, but you've got to maintain it, and you've got to do it respectfully. And respect for yourselves. Respect for the women that came before you. And respect for each other. That includes the men. As I said, I've got three sons. I've brought them up to have a sense of, not just purpose, but I've brought them up so that they don't think that males are everything and females are nothing. Lead by example, and I think everybody will have a better life, certainly any little people coming into the world in the next few years. So look, I wish you all the best, every success with your efforts personally and collectively. Just don't get too carried away. Alright then. Wiminjigi Yiman Kundibik Wurundjeri Balak. Welcome to the land of the Wurundjeri people. We'll try to keep you safe as long as you keep yourself safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie Marg. I think it's important to talk about one of the biggest attacks that women and the union movement are seeing right now. We're facing one of the greatest attacks that we have in many years. The Fair Work's decision to cut penalty rates is the... Yeah, shame. This is the biggest pay cut that workers have experienced since the Great Depression. And this is at a time when business is absolutely booming. This is class war from the top. And we know that these attacks are going to disproportionately impact women. We know that these attacks will disproportionately impact women because we are disproportionately in these industries. What this will do is serve to further widen the already growing gender pay gap in Australia today. This attack has a flow-on effect to a whole lot of different groups in society. One that I wanted to talk about is young people and students. For working class kids, this is going to make getting an education all that much more inaccessible. I want to acknowledge the National Union of Students who are here today and encourage everybody to get along to their demonstration on March the 22nd at the State Library at 2 o'clock. This is an important fight for decent access to education for everybody, and it takes up as well the issue of penalty rates. I think it's so great that we have so many unions here today. I myself am from the Rail, Tram and Bus Union. I work down at Flinders Street Station. The reason that I think it's so great that there's so many unions here today is because it's as workers, organised in our unions, that we have won the right to vote, abortion rights, the right to continue working after marriage, the right to work in any industry of our choosing, maternity leave, formal equal pay. And it's how we're winning paid domestic violence leave. And I just... that it's through the unions that we will win full, real, equal pay and equality at work. So our next speaker today is Michelle Jackson, a woman who clearly needs no introduction, but I'm going to give her one anyway. So Michelle is here today representing the Australian Services Union. Michelle joined her first union, the Meat Workers Union, when she worked as an offal packer in a small Victorian town. In 1982, Michelle got a job with the State Electrical Commission of Victoria and joined the MOA, one of the unions that later went on to form the ASU. In 1994, after having two fabulous daughters, Michelle rejoined the ASU when she went to work for the Shire of Benalla, which later became the Hume City Council. Michelle was a delegate for the ASU for 8 years before going to work for them in 2002. Michelle has worked as an organiser, a lead organiser, branch coordinator, and is currently in the acting position of branch executive president of the ASU. So I ask people to please make Michelle welcome.
Thank you. So I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians on the land on which we are meeting, and I'd also like to pay respects to the elders, past, present and future, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are here today. As women, we want economic justice. We want to be able to support ourselves and our children if we choose to have them, and not have to enter into a relationship with a man or stay in a relationship with a man just to have a decent standard of living. In theory, women have had equal pay since 1972. In reality, the gender pay gap is still 18%. And the superannuation gap is 100%. Most women nearing retirement have a superannuation balance which is half men of a similar age. The recent decision by the Fair Work Commission to cut penalty rates for retail and hospitality workers will disproportionately affect women and contribute to the gender pay gap, as the majority of workers affected by this decision are women. In a further slap in the face from the Fair Work Commission to justify their decision, in part they said it was because casual and part-time crew members are usually regarded as non-career employees. This decision highlights one of the contributors to the gender pay gap, that is that many women are forced to work in these industries in low-paid jobs, because it is the only way that they are able to manage their work and family responsibilities. Part-time and casual employment that offers this flexibility is generally not available in higher paying jobs. As a union official, I come across cases on almost a weekly basis where women who are returning to work from parental leave are denied the opportunity to work part-time in their substantive position and are forced to take a lower paying job in order to get part-time work. For this reason, many women working in these occupations are working below their level of their skill, experience and qualifications and now being treated less favourably for being non-career employees, for being seen to put their families' needs first. It's not the 1950s. We're not talking about mum earning a bit of pocket money so she can buy a new frock. These women rely on their income and penalty rates for their families and themselves to have a decent living standard, or in some cases, just to survive. One of the arguments, of course, is that cutting penalty rates or cutting wages will mean that businesses will employ more staff. What a load of crap. There have been a number of businesses come out and say that they won't be cutting penalty rates. But I've also heard of a business owner who said that they won't be cutting their employees' take-home pay. They're just going to get them to work longer hours for the same money. So it's more likely under these penalty rate cuts, rather than being more jobs, there's going to be less jobs. People will just be working longer hours. Whenever I raise the issue of equal pay, People say that women already get equal pay. If they do the same job as a man, they get the same pay. That's what everyone says. Sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. But it is also true that women don't get to do the same jobs as men, or not in any significant numbers. They don't get the well-paying jobs in construction or mining or management. Even in the female-dominated sectors that my union represents, such as social and community services, home and community care and libraries, the proportion of men in management roles is significantly higher than the proportion of men in direct service delivery. And when women do get management roles, they are usually paid less than men doing the same or similar roles. This is even more evident when it comes to above award salaries, non-salary benefits such as a car and bonus payments. So what can we do about it? We can keep fighting. Minimum pay rates, penalty rates, annual leave, sick leave, paid parental leave were not given to you by the boss or the government. They were all fought for and won by unions. As well as superannuation, Medicare and childcare. We've had some wins for family violence leave, and we continue to fight for paid family violence leave as an entitlement for all. And unions have fought for fair and equal pay. I think we all know of the successes of the Nurses Union and the Teachers Union, two of the biggest unions in the country. My union, the ASU, in 1982, along with other unions, campaigned for and got an equal remuneration order for social and community services workers, which delivered pay increases of up to 45% over 9 years, in addition to annual award rate increases. No, you don't. If you want economic justice for women, then you need to join a collective and fight for it. Obviously, the collective I would recommend would be a union. You won't get economic justice just by hoping for it, and you won't even get it by attending this rally. You need to get out and fight for it, and if you don't fight, you lose. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. When I say union, you say power. Union.
Power.
Union.
Power.
Union.
Power.
When I say union, you say power.
Power.
Union!
Power.
Union!
Power.
Thank you, comrades. The next speaker is also going to be speaking about workers' rights. I want to introduce Jane Green. She's they're a spokesperson from the Vixen Collective. The Vixen Collective aims to empower all sex workers through the provision of community and peer support. And promoting the cultural, legal, human, occupational and civil rights of all sex workers. Thank you for being with us, Jane.
Hi, I'm Jane Green. I'm a current Victorian sex worker. I'm queer. I'm a survivor of sex worker sexual assault. And as you've just heard, I'm a spokesperson for Vixen Collective. Vixen Collective, for those who don't know, is Victoria's care-only sex worker organisation. We're an unfunded, that means we get no money, volunteer organisation. And we're a sex worker-only organisation, and that means we have our volunteers and all participants in the organisation are current or former Victorian sex workers or sex workers that travel to Victoria to work. And we don't allow the participation by owners, operators or ancillary workers in the sex industry, so we are a workers-only organisation. To give you an idea of the sort of work that we do, we are involved in the reform of the Victorian Sentencing Manual last year. That's the Sentencing Manual for Judges in the Victorian court system. And we did that with pro bono legal support, because again, we get no money. And that was around the rape sentencing guidelines in Victoria. So for 36 years, Victorian judges were allowed to give reduced sentences to offenders that sexually assaulted sex workers.
Shame! Shame!
Yes, indeed, shame. And that was based on the fact that we're not chaste women, and so therefore it was judged that the impact on us of a sexual assault was less than it would be on someone else. Sorry, I need to shout or hold the mic closer, apparently. So obviously that says something, that offenders that sexually assault people in our community were able to be given reduced sentences. That says a lot about the stigma towards our community. And generally the sentences given to people that sexually assault sex workers were around half. And even with the guidelines changed, that's going to take time to change because of judicial attitudes. So that was an important piece of work by our organisation, but it's even more problematic that there's a lot of work like that that needs to be done, and we get no funding to do it. And often we do it without any support from workers' organisations and from women's organisations. And we should be doing that work together, because work like that more broadly affects sexual assault victims in general, who have a terrible time in the Victorian courts, as well as members of our community. So we exist at a point in time when sex workers' human rights are increasingly recognised by the United Nations, by the World Health Organization, by Amnesty International, by human rights and health organisations all around the world and around Australia. But most importantly, sex workers around the world and across Australia call for the full decriminalisation of our work. We speak out because we must be listened to, because sex workers, just like other workers, deserve the ability to access our human rights and our labour rights. And importantly, we must be able to work in safety. But we are often silenced, shouted down in public and in the media, not given space to speak, or spoken over by groups that claim to speak on our behalf. Sex workers do not need and have not asked anyone to speak on our behalf. We speak for ourselves. Groups that claim to speak for us steal space we need to have our voices heard. Groups that lobby to criminalise our work and lives while claiming to help us are literally harming us. Anyone that truly wants to help sex workers starts by listening to us. So listen, what we need is allies, and allies listen. The full decriminalisation of sex work is what best supports our human rights. And human rights should never be treated as a debate. We get them because we're human. They are inalienable. If you object to that, something is terribly wrong. So support sex workers' human rights. But it's also what is right. Thank you, Jane. Woo! When women's rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When women's rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
We won't stand for that, and we won't stand for the racism that it helps fuel.
So I want you to welcome to the stage Hibba.
Hey guys, thank you all for coming today. Today, I'm an angry Muslim woman. I'm an enraged woman of color. I am fed up of seeing the country we love harbor individuals who have so much hatred in their hearts. A few months ago, I met a woman from Iran. She fled persecution and lost everything for a chance of survival. She tells me her husband and daughter are stuck in Nauru. Her second daughter has breast cancer and she's stuck in Broad Meadows Detention Center. Her daughter in Nauru self-harms and her son, who lives with her, tried to commit suicide. Look me in the eyes, I dare you, and tell me these refugees are fleas. Liberal Senator David, whatever the hell your name is, you're the flea. Monsters like you have the audacity to question these refugees' integrity, because this woman will cross oceans and seas and risk her family's life because she didn't like the weather back home? Is she not worthy of living as much as we are? To begin with, these same men will tell Aboriginal women to get over it, because the mothers that were raped, the girls that were kidnapped, the Aboriginal women who are five times more likely to commit suicide should just get over it. And next, the Australian Human Rights Commission found that after Aboriginals, Muslim and Arab Australians face the highest rates of discrimination and prejudice across all domains. Does this not also classify as terrorism? Muslim women are in constant fear of attacks, hijab pulling, and verbal and physical abuse. On top of that, we have people attacking people from the Sikh faith because they're brown and therefore Muslim. So don't play the Islam isn't a race card, because you are a racist. So Malcolm Turnbull said that his dream was that Australia will be known for respecting women. Do you not realize that offshore processing is violence against women? Have you turned a blind eye to the fact that until 2015, there were 33 formal allegations of rape in Nauru? This is on top of 253 instances of self-harm and 22 suicides, including the vast majority of women.
You're listening to 24 Hours of Women Only Broadcasting on 3CR.
Just take this moment to reiterate that these politicians are the only fleas available. I got so angry when I heard that comment, because these people are still in the swear in public, but that's okay. And then they talk about the US deal. It's a gross disrespect of any human life or morals. And then you have white men that go to Facebook and have the audacity to call women feminazis or liberals. Pretty ironic. Because somehow, because of their privilege, equality becomes... They hilariously use the terms such as white genocide. They seem to forget that their ancestors wiped out entire civilizations right here and overseas. They forget that when they commit crimes, their whiteness is not put into the spotlight. That unlike us, they're viewed as human beings with unique identities. Meanwhile, we do things because we're Muslim or because we have colored skin. And on top of that, we have men asking for the deportation of Apex members. First of all, they thought Apex were Muslims. Then they realized they were Christians. Then suddenly it was their blackness that was blamed for it. Because they forget that white men still remain the biggest perpetrators of rapes, domestic violence instances, thefts, and murders. They forget that white men still run the world's largest pedophilia gangs, whether in the past towards Aboriginal children or in the present in churches and in detention centers under the guise of religion and national security. These same men are happy to call Aboriginals and black individuals apes on national television, but will somehow cry, there's no racism, because our experiences are just a myth to them. Because we have politicians like Pauline Hanson, an illiterate who can't seem to understand that Ahmed Fawad does not earn half as much as white CEOs of other companies do. But you know, he's Muslim, so. In conclusion, I just want to say that many white males in Australia, they need to pick up a history book and get off their privileged thrones
and realize that women are human too. Refugee women, Muslim women, black women, they have hopes, dreams, and fears too. Racism, Islamophobia, and white supremacy are still very much encouraged here. It's not just overseas. We have it pretty bad here too, trust me. We do not have to suffer because you can't accept that other people have rights too. I visited a refugee in a detention center just yesterday. He's on a hunger strike, and today, more than ever, I want to demand that they close the camps and free the refugees from this torture. Today, we need to put an end to the white man's hatred of refugee women, Muslim women, black women, and women in general that manifests in various degrees of oppression and inequality. Thank you once again, and just a reminder that we have a big refugee rally on the 9th of April. It's like a walk, and I really hope to see you guys there. And please keep empowering each other. This is amazing to see such a big crowd. I can't even see the end. And thanks again. Take care.
Broadcasting on 3CR.
Come celebrate the collective achievements of working women, past, present, and future, at the Women's Rights at Work Festival, March 1 through 9. Events include Feminist Book Club, the Rock and Frock Scala, Breakfast with Anne Summers, Feminist Politics in the Pub, a Women's Footy Clinic, feminist activist skills workshops, and a conference to stop gendered violence in the workplace. Also join us for the International Women's Day Rally, 5:30pm on March 8. Contact the women's team at Trades Hall or visit unionwomen.org.au for more details.
Victoria Trades Hall Council and the Victorian Trades Hall Women's Team are 3CR supporters.
Tuned in to 3CR, and this is IWD. We've just been listening to a live broadcast from the rally, and we will cross back to Tan and Michaela at the rally shortly. And we are live from the rally.
Hi, everyone. Into 3CR here live at the rally with myself, Tan Hung, and Michaela. So they're just marching down Bourke Street now, and they're going to be heading right down Swanston Street and then right onto La Trobe, and then we'll end up at Trades Hall. So for anyone who's missed the rally, please come down. There's a lot of people here. The energy is really great. And we heard some amazing speakers. We heard from Auntie Marg and Eugenia Flynn, to name a few, who spoke about like Aboriginal women and community and decolonization and colonization as well. So very important topics. We also heard issues on sex workers, as well as issues regarding pay and union rights. So definitely a range of issues to cover on today on International Women's Day. So there's always so much to talk about. Let's keep the conversation happening. Just wanted to do a big shout out to all the women of colour, the trans women of colour, gender queers, gender fluids, queers of colour, so Indigenous people, of course, and yeah, just acknowledging that we're gathering here, we're rallying on stolen lands belonging to the Wurundjeri people, so let's not forget that.
You are tuned in to 3CR Radio here in the 3CR studios at 21 Smith Street with Pilar and
Amy.
And we've just been crossing over live to the International Women's Day rally that's just left Parliament as we speak.
Yeah, and as you heard from Tan Hung, they're still marching and there's a crowd of people. It sounds amazing. So if you're anywhere nearby, you can still join the march.
And a great range of speakers live from the rally. In case you missed any of them, great coverage. But stay tuned to 3CR because it is 24 hours of women's only voices here at 3CR. And after this show, coming on in about 5 minutes, we will have the Nile show with Aziza Hussein, Sudanese women's show in Arabic. At 7 o'clock, The One Who Knows will be broadcasting in Spanish. At 7:30, Mother Tongue, Hope Matumbu will explore the intersection between migration and being a woman. And at 8:30, Afghan Radio. And then at 9:30, Girls Rock, finishing at 11 with Apartment of Sound. So really diverse voices here on 3CR. Yes, stay tuned to 3CR and we're going to play some music.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.